Chapter 32. That same evening, the Coram assembled in the main room of Brockhall. There was much to be discussed. Goody Stickle bustled about laying the table, with cogs firmly attached to her apron strings. The little hedgehog did not complain. Besides, speaking through a mouthful of hot acorn scone dripping with fresh butter and damson jam was not quite the form for budding warriors and daring escapers. He waved in passing to Ferdy, who was seated in a deep armchair with Ben Stickle. Between bites of his scone, Ferdy related a highly coloured version of their adventures.
"So me and Cogs broke the door down and pounced on these three weasels, or was it stoats? No, they were weasels. Anyhow, there were six of them, great, ugly vermin. Oh, did we ever give them what for? The Wildcat Queen was there, but she took one look at us and ran away. Good job, too. Do you know, Ben, me and old Cogs there, we had to carry four squirrels off through the trees, or was it otters? No, it was squirrels, I'm sure. Saved them from those Katia soldiers, though."
Ben Stickle wiped jam and crumbs from Ferdy's mouth.
"Must have made the pair of you powerful hungry. You haven't done anything but eat since you got back, except talk, that is. Are you sure you never chattered any of those stoats to death?"
When the table was laid, silence fell as Bella entered the room.
"My hall is your home," she said. "Please fill your platters and eat the excellent food. Thank you, Goody Stickle, for this splendid table."
There was an immediate clatter of serving and good humour.
"Pass that deeper in every pie. Mind you don't fall in."
"Oh, is that leaking onion broth I smell?"
"Fruit pie. Ouch, it's up."
"Here, cool it down with some of this cream."
"Pass the butter, please."
"Nut pudding. My old mum used to make this."
"I remember Gump finching it from her oven."
"Here, have a go at this quince and apple crumble."
"Hey, you used all the cream."
"I say, Goody, you must give me the recipe for your plum pudding."
"Ask your gran, she gave it to me."
"Now, which will I have? October ale, cider or buttermilk?"
"None. You're fat enough, Ben Stickle."
A pleasant time was passed eating the celebratory supper. When the dishes were cleared away, Abbess Germaine stood up.
"Praise silence for our host,"
she called. Bella took the floor.
"Where are Ferdy, Cogs, Spike and Posy?"
Ben pointed in the direction of the dormitory.
"Well abed and snoring like champions, man."
Bella bowed her head.
"Then let us give a moment of silence and thought to the memory of a very brave otter, the Mask, without whom none of tonight's joy would have been possible."
A respectful silence followed, broken only by an audible sniff from Skipper. Bella took a sip of buttermilk, then she wiped her eyes on the back of a heavy paw.
"Now to business. First, let me say it's been a good day in many ways, mainly because Ferdy and Cogs are back safe with us. Also because we have a new friend in our midst, Gingervere. I'm sure you will all join me in saying that our home is his, for as long as he chooses to stay here."
There was a round of applause. Gingervere stood and bowed.
"Thank you, Bella, and you too, my friends. But this cannot be,"
he said sadly.
"Sarmina is a very dangerous creature. My presence here would only endanger you all. I would never forgive myself if any of you suffered because of me. Tonight I will stay with you, but tomorrow I will leave at first light to go eastward through Mossflower, far away from Katir and all it stands for. I could not stay here, knowing that I would be adding to your problems. If Zarmina knew that I was here with you, she would go mad for revenge on us all, and who knows what evils her dark mind could think up. Somewhere, beyond Mossflower, I will make a fresh start. Thank you for all your help and kindness. All my life, wherever I am, I will carry the memory of my woodland friends deep in my heart. If the time should arrive when I can return the good treatment you have shown me, then rest assured you will not even have to ask. I will help in any way possible, for I owe the woodlanders of Mossflower a deep debt of gratitude."
The Wildcat sat down amid silence, which suddenly gave way to loud applause for his noble words. Ben Stickle shook him firmly by the paw.
"Mr. Gingervere, sir, it'll break Ferdy and Cog's little hearts to know you've gone away. But one day I'll tell them when they're old enough to understand. Thank ye for looking after my little og, sir."
Bella banged upon the table.
"As you are aware,"
she continued,
"our friends from Loamhedge and the Four Mills crew risked life and limb to find out about Katir. Old Dinny, I believe you've something to tell us."
The ancient mole tugged his snout to Bella, then spread a bark cloth scroll across the table.
Now, this year's quarter, you see. We've been a-comin' and a-goin' all the wrong ways. Now, see here, this'n's a map of Blow Cells. They's a girt cave and lake under Coatier. Also a tunnel what'll lead ye out into an hollow stump in woods.
There were murmurs of wonderment from the onlookers. Old Dinny wrapped a digging claw on the tabletop.
Oh, Formal and I been a-plannin'. He'll tell about it. I bent one for a speech.
Formal threw up his paws and announced in a clear, no-nonsense tone.
Flood her out! Charmania won't stay in no floating house.
Hubbub broke out. Columbine rushed to Formal's side, waving the scroll aloft.
Please, listen to what I have to say!
She shouted over the noise. Abbess Germaine looked proudly at her ward as she began to speak.
I was with Formal and old Dinny when we made the plan. Let me explain. First, it relies on the fact that Coatier lies in a land depression. Mossflower Woods itself is actually on much higher ground. The moles have studied the landfall.
Columbine laid the scroll out, pointing at two areas of the table, as if referring to a larger map.
Over here and over here. The River Moss runs on a northeast course through the woods, then takes a sharp bend to the west. Sometime in the past, there must have been a large lake where Coatier now stands, but this dried up when the river changed its course. We have since found the remains of that lake in the cave beneath Coatier.
Lady Amber did not see the point.
But how does that help us, Columbine?
Let the maid tell it,
Skipper whispered in her ear.
I think I've guessed the plan, though.
If the moles were to dig from where the river is closest to Coatier,
Columbine continued,
they could make flood tunnels from the banks of the River Moss down to the lowland and straight into the cave beneath Coatier.
Realisation dawned upon Lady Amber.
Then the old lake bed would fill up again.
Excited shouts rang out.
They'd be flooded!
The deer would sink beneath the lake!
Good riddance too, I say!
Skipper bounded up onto the table.
If we can make sluice gates, me and my crew will sink them on the riverbank to hold the water back until the tunnels are complete.
Lady Amber leapt up beside him.
Leave it to the squirrels, Skip. We'll build your floodgates. You just see to it that they're sunk properly into the banks.
Formal was not the greatest of leapers, but he clambered up on the table beside Amber and Skipper.
Hower! And us moles'll dig holes. We'll tunnel for ye, boy, okay us well.
Columbine thought the cheering and paw thumping would never stop. All around her, woodlanders were dancing, hugging each other, and whooping at the top of their lungs. Bella had to pound the table for a long time until order was restored.
Congratulations, Corrim. I think it's a good plan,
she announced.
Best of all, it will save open warfare and loss of life. Now, does every creature present agree to the plan?
There was a mass shout of approval. Every paw in the room shot up.
Aye!
Then we shall carry out this plan. We must, for I fear that Martin and his friends are long overdue on their return. Having said that, I do not wish any of you to feel downhearted, for who can calculate the journey to and from Salamandastron? We must hope and keep the faith in our friends' promise to carry out their mission. Maybe one day, not too far from now, I will see my father, Boar the Fighter, come striding through Mossflower Woods, along with Martin, young Dinny and Gonth, to lead us to victory. Wherever the questers and my father are this day, let us wish them good fortune.
A rousing cheer rang through Brockhall as Bella sat down and crossed paws with the Corrim leaders. Abbess Germaine had the final word at this meeting.
Yes, friends, good fortune to those who traverse afar, and good fortune to us all. I think the plan is a good one,
the frail old mouse told the assembly.
Even I and my brothers and Loamhedge, unused to fighting and war, can see that this will avoid unnecessary bloodshed on both sides, for friend and foe alike. A death is always a death. Bloodshed is an awful thing. What we are striving for is peace. Keep this thought uppermost in your minds. If I had a wish, it would be that we lived in harmony with those at Coatier. But this cannot be. So let me say again, good fortune to the lovers of peace and right. Let liberty and freedom be the legacy that we leave to those who follow us in the seasons to come. May they find true peace in Mossflower.
There was a reverent silence for what was, indeed, a heartfelt prayer. The four travellers were hungry. They had risen before dawn and were on the way through the low sand dunes where little else grew but tough sand grass. Belts were tightened after the previous night's meagre supper of a few roots which Dinny had managed to forage. The mole tried digging in the sand for edible material. He rubbed grit from his eyes with weary paws.
Grr! Be no good digging in this slidey sand. Might as well try digging holes in a river.
Gonf wiped the dry paw across his mouth.
I'm thirsty more than anything, mateys. What I wouldn't give for a good old beaker of cold cider right now.
Martin trekked on doggedly.
Look, it's no good going on about what we haven't got. We'll just have to keep our eyes peeled until food comes along. Here, let me show you an old warrior trick my father taught me.
He rummaged some smooth pebbles from his sling pouch.
Try sucking one of these. I know it isn't as good as a drink, but a pebble will keep your mouth moist and stop you drying up.
Being woodlanders, they were not used to travelling through soft sand. Even Logalog, who had made such a journey before, found the constant sinking of paws into dry, shifting grit very tiring. All four soon sat exhausted on top of a dune. Martin picked up some sand, letting it run through his paws. He scanned the distance to where the mass of rock stood, but there was no light issuing from it in daytime. Gonf spoke his thoughts aloud.
There stands Salamandastron, mateys, and here we sit, as far away from it as ever. Not a crust nor a drink between us, and sand all round. It's certainly hard going.
Logalog stood up, brushing his fur free of sand.
Wait here. I've travelled in sand before. I may be able to help.
He scrambled off among the dunes. Dinny scooped a small hole. He watched it fill up again.
My old grandfather Dinny'd never believe this. Stand on my tunnel.
Martin stretched out upon the dune.
Well, at least we've come this far. Don't worry, mates. We'll make it somehow.
Longalog returned, carrying four thick pieces of wood, branches he had found at the edge of the dunes.
Here, trim these up,
he told them.
They'll make good walking staves to help us through the sand.
They set about trimming the branches with teeth, claws and knives. Then they set off again. With the staves, the going was slightly better. Every once in a while, they spotted a small toad or a frilled newt from a distance, but the creatures would either ignore them or scuttle off among the sandhills. There was also the odd small bird which had to be shooed off with staves when it became too inquisitive. Logalog found some soft grass with a milky sap, and they chewed it as he conjectured what lay ahead.
Pretty soon we'll be out of these dunes and onto the firm sand. Maybe then I'll find something to eat. No water, though. Trouble is, most things on the shore taste salty, and that makes you want water even more. Oh, test the sand with your staves as we go. Here and there you may find sinking sands. Watch out for those big seabirds too, gulls and such. They'll gobble up anything at all. Show them you're not afraid. Whack out at them with your staves. Then they'll leave you alone. Now, if you see any pools of water, don't drink from them. It's all seawater, full of salt. Tastes very nasty. One last thing, stick together and don't wander off.
That all? Nothing else?
Gonf laughed and waved his staff.
Good. Then what are we lagging for?
To their amazement, the mouse thief skipped off singing.
I mustn't drink the water, and there may be naught to eat. Those gulls may see a mouse thief as just a tasty treat. I step out bravely on the quest across this funny land, and when I disappear they'll say, he's found the sinking sand.
Nothing keeps our Gonf down for long,
Martin laughed.
Come on, let's press on.
They came out of the dunes at mid-afternoon. Before them stretched the shore, flat, solid sand, dotted with small rocky outcrops. The sun glinted like gold leaf on the shimmering sea. Logalog ignored it and walked on. His three companions, however, could not help stopping momentarily to stare in awe at the distant reaches of mighty water. It staggered the imagination of woodlanders who had never witnessed such a spectacle. Dinny could scarce credit his first sight of the sea.
I sees it, but I don't believe it. Where do it all come from, Cloplog?
They say it's always been there.
The shrew shrugged.
Like the sky and the ground. See the sand here with ridges on it like little waves? Well, that's where the tide water comes up to. You'll probably see it flooding in soon. Keep your paws on the smooth sand here, this side of all these shells and such like. That's called a tide line.
Dinny was fascinated with the shells. He picked lots of them up. When he could carry no more, he would throw them away and start his collection afresh. Without warning, a black-headed gull swooped down at them. All four fell flat upon the sand. Logalog lashed out with his staff, catching it on the beak, and as it soared away, Martin hit it hard on the wing with a sling stone. The gull wheeled, screaming angrily. More seagulls flew in to investigate. Soon the four friends were hard-pressed, defending themselves against aerial invaders. Waving his staff at an oyster catcher, Martin called to Logalog.
I thought you said they'd go away if we showed them we weren't afraid of seabirds.
Logalog thwacked a common gull across his webbed claws.
You can never tell with these birds. Quick, let's make a run for it. There's some rocks over yonder.
Waving their staves furiously, they dashed along the beach to where a rocky outcrop thrust up from the sand. Finding a fissure between the rocks, they huddled in together. The gulls wheeled and circled a while, screeching threateningly, diving toward the rocks, but sheering off at the last moment. Finally, they gave up and flew off in search of other, easier prey. Martin poked his head out into the open.
All clear. They've gone now,
he reported. Logalog climbed swiftly to the top of the rocks.
Look, mate, a rock pool. Get the fishing tackle out.
Locked tightly in by the rocks, there was a beautiful miniature lake of deep sea water, crystal clear. They sat on the edge, gazing into the colourful depths.
Look, the shrimp! Just like Skipper and the crew get from the river moss,
Gonf exclaimed.
What's that, Logalog?
Where? Oh, that. I think it's called a starfish. Not very good to eat, though. See here, attached to the rock. These are limpets. They're a bit chewy to eat, but they'll keep us going.
Dinny shook his head.
Nay, Glog, Glog. Them shells like ye picking up out of sand.
The mole was surprised when Logalog managed to prise one loose with his knife. He scooped the flesh out and cut it up, giving them each a portion.
Chew on this,
he invited them.
Go on, it's not poison.
Gonf pulled a face at the unappetizing limpet flesh, but bravely he popped it into his mouth and began chewing.
Tastes very salty,
he commented.
I bet you could chew this until next harvest came round and it'd still be bouncing off your teeth. Best swallow it in one gulp.
Martin found some seaweed which tasted quite mild.
Hey, try some of this. It's like Goody's cabbage with a bit too much salt on. Not bad, though.
Between them, they explored the different tastes of rock pool vegetation. The shrimp were proving too difficult to catch, though Gonf sat determinedly, his line hanging in the water, baited with a piece of limpet. Gradually, it was taken by something which pulled it beneath an underwater ledge.
Ha ha, mateys! I've got a bite!
He shouted excitedly.
Look out! Here comes supper!
Assisted by Martin, he pulled and tugged at the line. Finally, they hauled up a small spidery object with a soft shell and two tiny claws.
Throw it back, it's a crab!
Logalog called urgently to them. Martin took hold of the small crab as Gonf tried to unlatch its claws from the segment of bait. There was a scrabbling and clattering noise at the poolside, and a huge carapace emerged. Logalog slashed the line with his knife, leaving the baby crab to enjoy the bait. The water splashed away, displaced by a considerable bulk. Four blackish-grey armoured legs clawed the way over the edge of the rock. It was a fully grown crab. The monster stood in front of them, its eyes roving hither and thither on long stalks. Two large plates opened, revealing a downward slanting mouth which shed water and gaped open at them. But it was the creature's claws which caused the most concern. Large, powerful pincers held high, snapping open and shut with a noise like steel hitting stone. They were studded with horny nodules that resembled teeth.
Back off, don't try to fight it, you'll lose,
Logalog said, not taking his eyes from the angry crab.
Keep backing off until we're on the sand, then we really have to run for it. Crabs can scuttle sideways very fast.
They retreated carefully. The big crab blew a bubble from its mouth, lowered its claws, snapped them viciously at the intruders, and charged like lightning. Now that Clud was gone, Sarmina needed a new captain of the guard. So she promoted Brog the Weasel. At first, Brog enjoyed his position of power. But of late he was sorry that he had ever donned the cloak of captaincy, particularly when he was called up to be interviewed by the Queen in her chambers.
Brog, I made you captain. You must find Gingerfear. He has kidnapped Ashleg.
Yes, Majesty.
Find yourself another captain. That stoat, Ratflank, he'll do,
she suggested.
I want you to go through the entire army, one by one.
Go through the army, milady?
He asked, puzzled.
Yes, jellybrains. You and Ratflank take them one by one to the cells.
Yes, milady.
Will you stop interrupting me and listen? All anyone ever says around here is yes, m'lady, or no, m'lady.
Yes, m'lady.
Shut up!
Sarmina shouted irritably.
Get them one by one in a cell. Pull their whiskers, then check their fur. Is their tail their own tail?
Is it, m'lady?
That's what I want you to find out, nitwit!
Oh, yes. But why, m'lady?
Sarmina paced the room, her voice rising to a crack crescendo.
Because one of them is Gingerfear in disguise, you clod! He's here in my fortress, plotting against me. Get out and find him!
Later, Brog sat at a barrack room table, joined by Ratflank and several other cronies. They were reduced to eating hard bread and woodland plants. Brog sipped from a flagon.
Huh. At least there's still a drop of cider left. I tell you, mates, the Queen has definitely taken a funny turn.
Oh, I don't know.
Ratflank smirked.
She's still got the sense to recognise a good stoat when she sees one. Look at me. I'm a captain now.
One of the ferrets spat out a mouldy crust.
Is that some kind of ceremony you carried out, Brog?
He asked.
What ceremony? What are you talking about, dog fur?
Well, the way you took Ratflank down to the cells and twitched his whiskers, then you pinched his fur and twitched his tail before you gave him the captain's cloak.
Oh, no. Matter of fact, you've all got to have it done.
What? You mean we're all going to be made captains?
Oh, I wish old Lord Greeneyes was here now, mate.
Brog sighed gloomily as he cupped his head in his paws.
Or even the other one, Gingerfear.
Warm sun rays cascading through the leaves mingled in harmony with the peace of Boss Flower Woods. Somewhere a cuckoo was calling, and young ferns curled the tendril tops toward blossom on the bramble. Gingerfear had travelled east since early morning, never once turning his head to look back toward Brockhall. He sat with his back to his sycamore and opened the satchel of food given him by the woodlanders. The very sight of a homely oat cake brought a lump to his throat at the thought of the good friends he had left behind, especially of little Ferdy and Cogs. With unshed tears bright in his eyes, Gingerfear wrapped the food up. He continued walking east through the peaceful flowering forest.